And we're holding on Samach Gimel Amud Beis, just above the middle of the Amud. The line begins Ra'a. We're in the middle of talking about the various aspects of wives, good wives, not such good wives, etc. So the Gemara says, the Gemara brings a pasuk where Hashem tells one of the pasukim where Hashem is telling the Navi to tell the Jewish people to do tshuva or you're going to be in trouble. And the expression is, Hashem says, Hinni mevi ra'a, behold, I'm going to bring an evil, asher lo yuchlu lotzes mimena, that they're not going to be able to get out of it. Good morning, Aaron. So what is that? So on the face of it, obviously, it's talking about golus. But Omer of Nachman, Omer of Mavua, zu isha ra'o ksubos meruva. This refers to, like we said yesterday, where a person has a bad wife, And she has a very large ksuba, so therefore he can't get out of it because he can't divorce her unless he can pay her ksuba, and he can't afford it. So that's what the pasuk is describing as. That's what the pasuk is describing as an evil asher lo yuchlu lotzis mimena, that they won't be able to get out of it. Then the next couple of psukim the Gemara is going to bring all on the face of it all have to do with golus. So Marsha explains, in other words, that the point is that now, on the face of it, these psukim are about golus. How is the Gemara diverting them instead to talk about a person's marital situation? The point is, it's a similar kind of thing, the same way as the Jewish people collectively are stuck in golus and being harassed by enemies where they can't get away. The same thing, the same person is in the same situation in this case over here, on a personal level. Similarly, when you have a pasuk in Eichah, Nesanani Hashem bidelei uchalkum, when the pasuk says Hashem placed me into the hands under the control of someone whom I can't get up and I can't avoid it. So similarly, Amar of Chista, Amar Ma'uk Bavachia, Zu Isha Rok, Subasim Maruba, the same thing. It means a bad wife with a large ksuba, where they're like the person is stuck and he can't get out of it. Amru. On the other hand, in the West, meaning in Eretz Yisrael, they said that pasuk is referring to a different kind of problem. This is a person where the amount, the food that he has depends on the money that he has. In other words, we talked about yesterday the idea that a person should have a plot of land where they can grow their own food. Now, when a person doesn't have that, where he has to just depend on what he buys in the store, then it's always a worry. Prices may go up, the stores may even close. There may be a shortage, and then he's in trouble. The Gemara expresses the same thing elsewhere. In a different Gemara in Menachos, there's a pasuk from the Teichacha that says, "V'hoyu chayecha tzluy l'chami neged." Your life will be hanging in the balance before you. And the Gemara says they are also refers to somebody whose food supply depends on having to buy it rather than grow it themselves. So here the Gemara is saying,
"If you have your own food,
what?
If you have your own food supplies because you have a plot of land, you're just as much dependent on changing the weather and
you're dependent on changing weather. That's true. But you're not dependent." On other people, where the other people may have, there's going to be other things as well. Like we're saying, there may be inflation, there may be, supply chain issues, as they call them nowadays, where at least, when you're growing your own food, as the Gemara expresses it elsewhere, Mamin b'chei ha'ilamim v'zeireya, you trust in Hashem and you plant, and then you're completely dependent on Hashem. So then, if you're depending on your level of bitachon, then you're good. But when other people are involved as well, then you have that consideration as well, and that's Gemara is saying is more worrisome. Another pasuk from the Teichacha, which the Gemara is darshaning also in a similar sense about a person's personal situation. The pasuk says, "Banecho v'nesach ha'nesunim la'am acher." Your sons and your daughters are going to be given over to a different nation. So Amar of Chanan bar Rava, Amar Rav, Zu Esha Sa'av, that refers to a stepmother, to a father's wife. So in other words, what happens is that the first wife passes away, and the father remarries, and now the new mother is not necessarily as nice to the children as the old one was. So therefore, again, Marsha says that mainly the pasuk is talking about golus, but the point is it's as bad a situation as golus as if the person is as if you're being ruled over by a foreign nation. Maharsha explains that the previous psukim imply that we're actually talking about our enemies, the enemies of the Jewish people. Here it doesn't say that. It just says, "Va'am acher." Therefore, the Gemara doubts that we're not necessarily talking about trouble with the enemies, but rather we're talking about internal troubles. Anyway, a similar thing, another pasuk in Parashas Hazinu. The pasuk is "Begoy novel achisem." Hashem warns the Jewish people, "I'm going to make them angry with a degraded nation." So again, Omer Avchanan bar Rava, Omer Lav, Zut Yisharok, Sabas and the Rava, the same thing. We're referring to a bad wife with a large ksuba, so therefore it's like the person is, it's the equivalent, in other words, on a personal level, of the national level where the Jewish people are ruled over by a degraded nation, a low-class nation that harasses them, and they have no way of getting away from, and it's the same thing over here. Rav Eliezer, on the other hand, Rav Eliezer, Omer Eloach Zdrukim. On the other hand, Rabbi Eliezer says the Goy novel refers to the tzdukim, or actually that was changed by the censors. It's really supposed to be minim, which where one of the meanings of minim is people who deny Hashem altogether. As you find, the Pasuk in Tillim describes it, but the novel, the degenerate person, says in his heart, there's no God, so therefore, when you're ruled over by such people, then that's a Goy novel, that's a degraded nation, and then you're really in trouble. You look at in recent Jewish history, think of how it was, for example, for the Jews living under communism in Russia in the old days. The Masnisa Tana, then in a Braisa, we learn a third meaning of the Goy Novel Achisem, Elu Anshe Barbaria of Anshe Martinoi. This refers to the people of Barbaria and Martinoi, which it seems are places in North Africa. Shemahalchin Arumim Bashuk, these people go around in the street undressed. So whether we're talking about that these were like tribes that you have nowadays in the Amazon or whatever who do that, or whether we're just talking about that they would, while they're going about, they would be doing heavy work, hard work or whatever, and they'd take off their clothes while they're doing it. Either way, the point is, there's nobody as disgusting and abhorrent to Hashem as somebody who walks around naked in the street, because then like they're showing they don't even have a tzelem of a king. So therefore, so when Jews are ruled over by such people, then it can be described as going novel achisem, that Hashem is saying that I anger the Jewish people and make them upset through a nation that themselves are, they themselves are degenerate and they themselves have no morals or anything. Rabbi Yechanan says a fourth possibility of who the novel are, Elu Chavrim. It refers to the Chavrim, which are Rashi describes them as Parsiim Rishoyim, wicked Persians, where they mock the Jewish people and they don't recognize the honor and the greatness of the Jewish people. Historically, what it was is we had the national religion of Persia was a religion called Zoroastrianism. They worshipped fire and they worshipped various other things. In particular, in Rabbi Yechanan's times, there was a change of government in Persia and in Babel, as the Gemara is going to tell us in a second, that the Chavri, who were more fanatical about their religion, took over from a previous dynasty that had been, they were also officially, they followed this religion, but they were more relaxed about it. So now these Chavri, the Gemara mentions here and in various other places, were very fanatical about their religion, and they caused a great deal of trouble to the Jewish people through it. So Rabbi Yechanan is saying that they're the ones who are described in the Pasuk as the novel of the degenerate ones. In other words, the idea is, based on what Rashi is saying, at least the previous Goyim recognize that the Jewish people are a noble nation, and therefore, okay, they may not like what we're doing, but on the whole, they're going to leave us alone, whereas the Chavri were not like that. So in fact, the Gemara says, Omer le Rabbi Yechanan asu Chavri the Babel. They told Rabbi Yechanan, who was living in Eretz Yisrael, that the Chavri have come to Babel, meaning, in other words, they're in charge now. He was so shocked by that shugga, he bent over Nuffal and fell down. He felt bad that now the Jews of Babel and the great Shivas over there are all going to be under the rule of such a people, and who knows what's going to happen, what kind of Zeres and Shmadis and whatever they're going to make. Omrulay, but then they told Rabbi Yechanan, Makabli Sheikhta, these people, they will accept bribes. So they are fanatical about their religion, but they're also, you can buy them all. So Tritz Yosef, then he sat back up straight, because then he realized in that case it's not so bad. They may be fanatical about their religion, and they're going to try to call, and they're going to want to cause trouble for the Jewish people about it, but since you can buy them off, then it's not so bad. The yeshivas and the kehilas in Babel will be able to continue existing and functioning, as in fact they did. So now the Gemara goes on to mention about these chavrim that there were various zeres that they made in Babel to try to interfere with Jewish life. And the Gemara is going to talk about that. Gozru al gimel v'fnei gimel. They made zeres about three things that are essential to Jewish life. And the reason for each one of them is because the Jewish people, up until that point, had been careless with a mitzvah related to that. Gozru al abasim v'fnei matonis. Number one, the chavrim made in Babel a zera against shechita, which you have many times in Jewish history since then also, where such zeres have been made. And the reason is, because the Jews in Babel were being careless about giving Zroya L'chayayim B'keva to the Kohen. We know the Torah tells us you're supposed to give those from a shechted animal. So the Jews in Babel had gotten careless about that, which, the Oruch HaNer and other Achronim talk about, for each one of these things, we don't have to say that the Jews of Babel were outright violating the mitzvah. They may have had valid reasons for it. In the case of Zroya L'chayayim B'keva, there are in fact opinions in the Gemara in Chulin that it doesn't even apply in Chutz La'aretz. So they may have been following that. Nevertheless, the Gemara is saying that Hashem judged them strictly because of that, and therefore caused the Goyim to make this Zera, gave the Goyim the idea to make this Zera against them, that they're not going to be able to shecht animals and eat them, and that way they would realize so Maharsha actually points out that Maharsha says not so much that it's not applicable in Babel, but they would find ways to get around it. For example, there's a halacha, if you make a partnership with a goy and you own the animal together with him, then you're parted from Zerah L'chayayim V'keim. So they were using such loopholes, and therefore Hashem brought this Zera against them so that they should take notice and realize, we're doing something wrong as far as meat, and therefore we need to fix that up, and then Hashem will take away this Zera. Similarly, a gozer al mechatzoris from Pnatzvila, the goyim there, these chavrim, made a gzera that people should not be able to bathe in the bathhouses. And the reason was because they had gotten careless with tzvila, which again, Maharsha says, not that they weren't toveling at all. I mean, that's an isur kares. It means that, for example, they weren't being careful with some of the particular dinim of it. For example, you have, there's chafifa. The woman is supposed to scrub her body and her hair very carefully and comb her hair to make sure none of it is stuck together. And then shortly after that, go tovel. And they weren't doing that. They were doing the chafifa sometime before the tevila. So therefore, again, Hashem brought this zera on them so they should take notice. The Oruch HaNer says also it could be they had gotten careless with men's tefillah, which is not even required of Yalacha, but still. And the third one, Kamachati Shochbi, the third one is that these chavrim were digging up the dead. One of the part of their religion was that they considered the ground to be holy, and therefore they themselves didn't bury their dead in it. They would put them up on platforms or something for the wild birds to eat or something like that. Anyway, so they, at the beginning, so they were doing the same kind of thing. In Babel, they were going around and digging up graves in order to enforce their religion. And the reason is, the Gemara says, this was a punishment for the Jewish people who were happy on the Goyish holidays, which again, Maharsha says, so they used as a heter the fact that the Gemara mentions elsewhere that the Goyim and Chutz La'aretz are not necessarily so attached to their religion, so even their religious holidays are not really so religious. They're more like secular holidays. Like you think of nowadays, for example, the equivalent of how in America, how Xmas and New Year's and whatnot are celebrated, where there's very little religion in it anymore. So the Jews above all took the same view, but nevertheless were saying Hashem held it against them and therefore caused this to happen so that they should realize. The implication of all of this is, we said in the Gemara yesterday that Hashem brings punishments on the Goyim every time you read a headline about some disaster in the world. It's meant to be, as we said yesterday in the Gemara, that a Yid should realize this is meant as a lesson for me, that we Jewish people need to do tshuva. Here we're saying, since they didn't take that kind of lesson, then they had to be shown it to themselves so that they would realize it. So the Gemara continues, Shenema, as we see in the Pasuk, where it predicts about this kind of punishment that the dead are going to be dug up. The Pasuk says, V'hoysa yad Hashem v'chemu v'aviseichem, Hashem's hands will be against you and against your fathers. Now, what do you mean against your fathers? Your fathers are already dead. How is Hashem going to punish them now? So what it means is that Omer, Rav Bar Shmuel, Zuchatoti Shichti, that refers to this, where the dead are dug up, where there you have, even though they're long since dead, they're nevertheless still suffering from that. Because their neshama is still perceiving. As in fact, we learn in a braisa that because of the averus of those who are living, And then the ones who are dead end up getting dug up. So therefore, so that's why the Navi Shmuel is warning them, if you don't do what Hashem wants, then not only you're going to be punished, but because of you, your ancestors are going to end up getting punished as well. So the point is, Marashah says, the connection is, like this, they were being happy at an inappropriate time on the Goyisha holidays, and therefore they wind up having to mourn extra when they have to take these dug up bodies of the bones of their ancestors and figure out what we're going to do with them and rebury them, then that causes them tsar, so that undoes the simcha that they had on the inappropriate simcha that they had on the Goyisha holidays. And the Gemara continues on that topic. You have a pasuk in Yirmiyah warning again about what's going to happen at the time of the Churban. Many people are going to be killed, the pasuk says. Their bodies won't be gathered up and they won't be buried. They will become garbage and waste on the surface of the ground. In other words, the bodies will just be left there and unburied, and wild animals and whatever will come and eat them. But then the next, it sounds like the person would be better off staying alive at that point. But the next pasuk continues. The people who are alive would prefer to die because the situation is going to be so bad. So what is it? Is it going to be better at that point, time of the Churban, to be alive or to be dead? So he says, and what it means is, the nivcha mavas mechayim means something else. He says, what the pasuk means is, nivcha mavas l'rishoyim, for the rishoyim, they're better off dying, shalo yichyu ba'olam hazeh, they shouldn't continue to live in this world, v'yechtu, because when they do, they're going to continue doing averus, v'yiplu b'gehenim, and they're going to wind up in Gehenna. So in other words, the pasuk is telling us two different things. That the dead are going to be left unburied, and nevertheless, though the rishoyim who stay alive and have the opportunity to continue doing avodah, so even worse off than that, and therefore the Eibishter does a kindness for them and causes them to die, and as we're saying in the previous pasuk, not get buried, and that way at least they have a kapara for their avodah, where otherwise they would just be getting worse and worse. Getting back now to topics about marriage. The Gemara brings over here Kosev B'Sefer Ben Sira. It says the following in Sefer Ben Sira. Sefer Ben Sira is a sefer that was written at near the beginning of the second Bais Mikdash. In some places it mentions that the author was a grandson of Yirmiyahu HaNavi, and there's some discussion, which we touched on a little bit in Chagiga, about how exactly he was conceived in a rather unusual way. Zera that was floating around in a bath, in a tub or whatever, and Yirmiyah's daughter got pregnant from it. Anyway, the kitzer, this fellow was named Ben Sira, so he wrote a sefer near the beginning of the second Bais Mikdash. Much of the sefer is written in a style very much like Sefer Mishlei. It has short statements and proverbs about chokhmah and about good behavior and so on and so forth. The Gemara discusses in some places that because it was so similar in style to Tanakh, there were people who wanted to think that it was part of Tanakh, and for that reason, the Mishnah and the Gemara and Sanhedrin talks very negatively about the Sefer. So the upshot was that over time, the original of the Sefer was lost, and all there was a Greek translation that his grandson made, and for thousands of years, all they had was the Greek translation, so it didn't become part of our Tanakh, the Goyim had it, Lahavdil as part of their Bible. Eventually, they discovered large parts of the Hebrew original in the Cairo Geniza, so now they have a substantial part of it they have the original Lashon Kodesh. Anyway, the Gemara still, even though the Gemara speaks negatively about it in some places, still, on the other hand, even that Gemara in Sanhedrin says there are positive things in it, which we can douse in public. And so here, the Gemara brings a long quotation from it, which, among other things, part of the quotation is about a good wife versus a bad wife. So, Kosev B'Sefer Ben Sira, Isha Tova Matana Tova Labayla, a good wife is a good present for her husband. Uchtiv, and then he continues, Tova B'Chek Yirei Elikim Tinasin, a good wife will be placed in the lap of a person who's a Yirei Elikim. Which means, in other words, Marashah says, sometimes you can have. We know that before a person is created, before a person is conceived, then it's announced in Shemayim when a person is conceived, whatever, it's announced in Shemaim who their Basherta is going to be. But a person can daven and ask for Rachmim from Hashem, and that changes, the mazel. So here you have, in other words, this Isha Tova might have been destined for a different person, but the Yirei Elokim davened better and was closer to Hashem, and therefore he has the schus that he ends up marrying her. Next, he continues, Isha ro tsaras labayla. He continues, a bad wife is like tsaras for her husband, like tsaras, which is attached to the body, so she's attached to him. My takante, so he says, what's the takana? You go shena, let him divorce her, v'yisraf mitzaraita, and he'll be healed from his tsaras. Another place, then Sira continues, Isha yofa ashved baila, a beautiful wife, her husband, how happy and fortunate is her husband, mispa yom of kiflayim, his years are doubled. In other words, he's sameach b'chelkei, so he feels as if he lives twice as long. Maushav refers to the fact that we find that by Yaakov Avinu, for example, when he was working for Rachel, that he worked to win her hand in marriage for 7 years, and because she was beautiful and he loved her, so he was willing to work. He worked 7 years, and then another 7 years, and the whole thing felt like Yomim Achadim, like a short amount of time. So that's the Mispah Yom of Kiflayim. Elsewhere also, there's an explanation. In Sanhedrin, there's also an explanation that when he has a beautiful wife, then he's less likely to be attracted to other women. So therefore, he won't end up committing adultery and other averus with them, and therefore he'll live longer. Next, Ben Sira continues, Halam Enechama Esha Schein, hide your eyes from a graceful woman. In other words, when somebody else has a beautiful wife, don't look at her. Penti lochad b'mtsudasa, otherwise you might be caught up in her net, in her snare. And he continues, al tak etzobayva, don't incline yourself to her husband. In other words, don't try to become friendly with her husband, limsech ima yayin v'shecher, to mix and pour wine and strong drinks with him. In other words, you're going to think to yourself, you know what? How am I going to get access to this woman? I'll become friendly with her husband. I'll come over to his house to drink, and then things will develop from there. So he's warning, don't do that. And he continues, through the appearance of a beautiful woman, many people have been destroyed. Marshal refers to the Dor HaMabul, for example, which were destroyed because of Znus, which started in this way. And many and mighty are the ones who were killed through such a thing. Marshal refers to, for example, Shimshon was tripped up by a pretty woman, by Delilah, and we know what happened with him. So even though as mighty as he was, he ended up getting killed through this kind of thing. So be careful of it. Ben Sira is warning you. He continues, Rabim hoyu pitzei roichel, many are the wounds of the peddler, because what happens is you have a peddler who goes around from house to house and from town to town and sells perfumes and cosmetics and whatnot. So very often he takes advantage of that, since he's going and doing business with the women and their husbands aren't necessarily home. So he may use that as an opportunity to commit niyuf. Then what happens is the husband comes home and beats him up. So a roichel, if he's not careful, ends up suffering many wounds. And he continues, Hamagilin Ledvar Erva, where they accustom people to matters of erva, which includes that point, in other words, that these peddlers go around selling cosmetics, and therefore they make it easier, and they have more opportunities, and they make it easier for people to commit niyuf, to commit adultery. Kinnitzot maver gacheles, like a spark that's burning in a coal. Maharsha explains, in other words, that it starts off like a little spark, and eventually it becomes a coal, and eventually it becomes bigger and bigger. And he continues, "Kichluv maleiv, like a cage full of birds. Kain bateim maleim yirma, so are their houses full of trickery." That those words actually, "Kichluv maleiv, kain bateim maleim yirma," is actually taken from a pasuk in Yirmiyah. Again, you know, Ben Sira having been Yirmiyah's grandson, I guess it makes sense that he used a lashon from his grandfather. Anyway, the point is, like you have like a cage full of birds where the feathers are sticking out on every side. The same way you have this person's house is full of mirma, is full of trickery and injustice. Marsha explains, in other words, that you're talking about that you have a cage has a lot of small birds in it. Here it's as if it's full of one big bird where all of his thoughts are on his tivus of how he's going to fulfill them, and therefore therefore Ben Sira is warning you, don't do that, don't have that big bird in your cage where it's consuming all your thoughts and then it's going to lead you in the wrong way. He continues, Al Tetsa Tsaras Mocher, don't feel bad for what's going to happen in the future. In other words, don't worry about the future. Kilo say that my yelad going. You never know what the next day is going to bear. Every day things change. Those words Kilo say that my yelad going are taken from Mishlei. Again, the sefer is written kind of in the style of Mishlei, and he continues. Shema mocha bava inenu. After all, tomorrow might come, and the person is no longer there. He might die. The nymph and the star, Allah Olam Shein Shaloi, and then he said that he's feeling bad for a world that he wasn't even in. So no sense in worrying about the future. And he continues, not all these things are relevant to our sugya. Not all of them are talking about a wife and about the relationship between a husband and wife. The Gemara in Sanhedrin brings all of the series of statements of Ben Sira back to back. To say, in other words, that even though we're saying there's negative things about Sefer Ben Sira, and the Gemara there in Sanhedrin says there were even silly things in it, but nevertheless, there are milim malyasa, there are positive statements in it, and we can douse in those, and the Gemara brings this whole series of statements, so for that reason, the Gemara is bringing them all over here also. Anyway, Ben Sira continues, Minad Rabim Mitoch Besecha, keep away the many people from your house, in other words, don't just invite everybody into your house indiscriminately. The lawyer call Toby Besecha, don't bring everybody into your house, which means, in other words, so first of all, as far as the previous one, the Tsaras Mocher is that for example, that he's afraid of a Rosha who's going to, who's threatening to harm him. So he's saying, after all, that Rosha may not exist tomorrow, and certainly not, he won't be an Olam She'ina Shaloi, he won't be an Olam Haba, so therefore don't worry so much about him. As far as the Menar Rabin, Marsha says, in other words, you have a mitzvah of Achnas Sarach, and you have a Sudas Mitzvah. But it's saying, in other words, that so first of all, people who just walk into your house on your own, Menar Rabin, keep them out of your house, and even when you're doing Achnas Sarachim, and so forth, then still, the Loya Kol, Tovi Beisecha, don't just bring everybody indiscriminately, make sure that they're Erlacha people that you're inviting. Which fine, you know, your average yid has a cheskes kashrus, but in other words, if you know that there's somebody who's a no good nick, then don't be inviting them into your house. Ben Sira continues, Rabim Yiyu Dosha Shleimecha, there may be many people who are looking out for your welfare, you have a lot of friends, Gali Soid La'echad Me'elef, but nevertheless, reveal your secrets to only one out of 1,000 of them, in other words, don't think that because there's a lot of people who like you, therefore you can trust them with your secrets, realize that you have to be careful about who you tell your secrets to. Okay, so that's all quotation from Sefer Ben Sira. Moving on, the Gemara says, Omer Rav Asi. So now let's revisit the matter of Pruavu that we were talking about, that one of the main purposes why a man gets married, after all, is in order to accomplish Pruavu. So let's go and continue talking about that. Ben David, Mashiach, will not come until all the neshamas in Guf have been used up. We mentioned that briefly the other day in the Gemara. We said that was why Rav Huna had said that even if the children that a person had passed away, he still was Makai and Kruavu because he brought those neshamas out of Guf. So Rashi here and in other places describes that Guf is the Rashi. Rashi over here describes it a little differently than he does in other places. He describes it's Hargud. It's a curtain or a barrier that's between the Shechina and the Malachim. And then over there is where the Neshamas that were created in Sheshes Mebereshes are located, and then they're eventually sent down into bodies. So once all the Neshamas have been used up in Guf, then David can come, then Mashiach can come. Shenema ki ruach milafana yatoif. As the passage says, a spirit is yatoif from before me, where the word yatoif means, Rashi says to mean delays. So the ruach, the spirit of Mashiach, ruach elikim, rachefes apnei moim, is being delayed because of neshamas and niyosisi, because I made neshamas and those have not come down to the world yet. So therefore, so the point is that a person accomplishes pruavu, then they're bringing Mashiach closer. Tanya, then we learn in a braisa, Rabbi Yezom, Kol Misha Ein Oisif, the period of Arivia, a person who does not involve himself in doing Pruavu, Ki'ilu It's as if he's spilling. It's as if he's spilling blood. Because again, he's keeping the shamus out of the world. So it's as if he killed them. But Adam, damage shopik. The pasuk says, the person who spills the blood of man in of man. But Adam, damage shopik. In through man, his blood will be spilled. Which, by the way, this is one of the sources in the Torah for the issue of abortion, which has been a great deal of news in the last week or two. The Gemara explains in Sanhedrin that based on this pasuk is where we learn that Bnei Noach are absolutely usur to do such things. For Jews, you have certain heterim when the mother's life is in danger and whatever, but for goyim, not. Anyway, Uchtiv Basre, the next pasuk continues, Va'atim Kruvu, you should be fruitful and multiply. So we see, in other words, that there's a connection between these two things, that if a person is not doing Kruvu, then it's as if he's shrek of done. Rav Yaakov says, or on the side here it says Rav Akiva, Ke'ilu Mamayit Admus, another point is it's as if he's reducing the image of Hashem in the world. Shenema, the same passage continues. Kivat Selam Elakim Asa Es Adam, that Hashem created man in His image. Ochtiv Basri Va'atim Kruvu Gaimer. And the passage continues. You be fruitful and multiply. So a person who doesn't do the second one is as if he's removing Hashem, as if he's reducing or removing Hashem's image from the world. He's taking away the Selam Elakim from the world. Now, Omru Loy Ben Azay Omer, Ben Azay says it's both. Ke'ilu Shreif of Damim Umimai said Mus. Ben Azay says a person is not Oisik and Kruavu. It's both. It's as if he's spilling blood and he's reducing Hashem's presence in the world. Shenem of Atam Kruavu. Because again, the Ba'atim Kruavu is following both those things. The previous pasuk mentions about Shreifach Dama Adam and it mentions Tselem Elakim. So therefore, so a person who doesn't do Kruavu, we're saying is both. So Gemara says, Omru Loy Ben Azai. So they said to Ben Azai, Yesh No Dirish Ben No Mekayim. There are some people who darshan very nicely, and they also do what they, and they also do what they're darshaning. They also fulfill it very nicely. No Mekayim, they No Dirish. And then you have people who do it, even though they're not darshaning nicely. But after No Dirish Ben No Mekayim, you're darshaning very nicely of how important it is to do Pruvu. New, but you're not being Mekayim. You're not married. You're not having children. What's going on? And Ben Azai. So Ben Azai answers them, Uma Esa, what can I do? I can't get married. Shenafshi choshka b'torda. That my soul yearns for Torah. Therefore, Efshal Olam Sheiskai Mai Be'acherim, the world can continue to exist through others. Torah just points out, but actually based on a different Gemara, he did actually go and get married. He did marry Rav Akiva's daughter. But then Tosfos refers to a Gemara in Sota that says that he divorced her. Because of that, in effect, he was so in love with Torah that he couldn't keep up a normal family life. Now, how is he allowed to do that? There is a good deal of discussion among the Achronim about that. One possibility is there's something from Rabbi Hanan Wasserman that says, in effect, it was a case of oinus. The same way as you'd have you have other situations when, for whatever reason, a man can't get married, psychological problems or whatever it is. So here, it was the Mal Yusa, it was because he's learning Torah, but the point is it was considered a form of oinus, and therefore he's not held to account for that. The Alter Rebbe talks about, actually, in Hilchos Talmud Torah, that what it is that the Ben Azai figured, for the average person, they can get married and they can learn Torah, and one doesn't interfere with the other. For Ben Azai, he figured that the mitzvah of Yediyas HaTorah, you have a mitzvah, besides you have a mitzvah to learn Torah, but you also have a mitzvah to know the entire Torah to the extent you can. And Ben Azai felt that one is going to interfere with the other. If he gets married and has a normal family life, he's not going to be able to understand the Torah in the way that he should be able to. And therefore, in that sense, he's like, Oisek mitzvah, Potter min mitzvah. And he's saying the fact is it can be accomplished through other people. Other people will have children and they'll continue to make the world exist. Obviously, this is only a very rare thing. Even in that time, Ben Azai was unique in that way. Certainly, we can't say that other people can use that as an excuse. Next, Tanya Idach, we learn in another Braisa. Rabbi Eliezer Omer Kol Mi She'ein Oisek Piri V'Rivya Kilo Shreifach Damim. We have similar to the previous Braisa, where Rabbi Eliezer, in the first Braisa, it was also Rabbi Eliezer, said that anybody who doesn't do Piri V'Rivya is if he's spilling blood. Shneim Shreifach Dama Adam V'Samach Le'Va'atim Kruva Gamer. Rabbi Lozer Ben Azaria Omer Kilo Ma'at Admos. In the first Braisa, it was Rabbi Yaakov or Rabbi Akiva who says it's as if he's reducing Hashem's presence in the world. So here it's Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah says that Kilo Ma'ay said Mus, Ben Azai Omer V'Cholo, Omer Lozer Ben Azai Yeshna Derish V'Cholo, and then the Braisa continues with Ben Azai's opinion and his answer, like we said before. The Gemara continues on this topic. Tanan Rabbanan, we learn in a Braisa. The Pasuk says that when the Oren was traveling, and then when it rested, over Nucha Yoyma, when the Oren rested in a new place where they're going to, where the Jewish people are going to be camping, Yoyma, then Moshe would say, Shuva Hashem, Rivavais Alpha Yisrael. Hashem, return to and rest your Shina on the tens of thousands and the thousands of the Jewish people. So the word rivavos implies two myriads, two 10,000s, so 20,000, and alfe means thousands, so 2,000. Melamed she'ena shchina shorda apochus b'shnei alofim or shnei rivavos miyisrael. From here we learn that the shchina does not rest on less than 22,000 Jews. Now, there's different levels of Ashuras Ashrina. You know, we say, for example, in Pirkei Avos, we say that even two people are learning Torah together than they have, the Shchina is listening in. So, but you have, as there are more people, then you have a greater and greater level of the Ashuras Ashrina. So Marashah refers to the fact that you have the Machne Shchina Shomayla, the Gemara mentions elsewhere, is 22,000 Malachim. And in that generation, you have the Levium, were 22,000 or all Tzadik. Because after all, they weren't involved in all the Hatoyim of the Dor HaMidbar. So therefore, so that's what we're saying, that the Shechina needs that level of Asheras Hashechina, requires 22,000 Jews. So the Braisa continues, Harei Shoho Yisrael Shnei Alachim Shnei Rovavis Chaser Achad. Imagine you have a case where the Jewish people amount to 21,999, Vizel Osif, and then you have one person who could have gotten married and had children, and he doesn't. It comes out then that that person, by failing to do that, has prevented the Shechina from resting, has caused the Shechina to remove itself from the Jewish people. So that's another point where we see how important Puri Verivya is. The Gemara continues, the Braisa continues, Abba Chanan Omer Shum Rav Eliezer, Chayev Misa. A person who is not Osik in Puri Verivya is Chayev Misa, B'dei Shemayim. As you find by Nodav and Abihu, where the Pasuk makes a point of mentioning that they didn't have any children, implying that if they had children, then they wouldn't have died. The source of that would have helped them. So like this, that was one of the things that was held against them. Acherim, which usually means your mayor, say another point when a person doesn't do period of Rivia, Gurim the Shechina should just start at Israel. He calls it that the Shechina removes itself from the Jewish people, even if, now before we were talking about, we were saying that, let's say, there were only 21,999 Jews at a certain point. Now we're saying, even no matter how many Jews there are, Acherim are saying that still failing to do Peruvu causes the Shechina to go away from the Jewish people. Shenema, as the Pasuk says, Hashem says to Abraham, Lias v'chola l'kimol zarecha acharecha, to be a God for you and for your children after you, implying, Bizman shazarecha acharecha, Shechina shereh. When you have children following you, then the Shechina can rest there. But if you have no children to follow you, Al Mishurim, what's the Shechina supposed to rest on? Allah Eitzim Balavonim, is it supposed to rest on the wood and on the stones? So therefore, you need to have Jews in order for the Shechina to rest. So thus the importance of Puruvu. So now the Mishnah continues on that topic. Since you have a mitzvah of Puruvu, Nasa'im Isha, if a man married a wife, and he was with her for 10 years and she still didn't have any children, he's not able to be mevatel the mitzvah of Puruvu anymore. So either he has to divorce her, or he has to marry a second wife along with her before Chayim Deir Ben Gershom. After Chayim Deir Ben Gershom, then obviously not. Now, nowadays, we don't usually carry out this halacha, and we'll see, once we discuss the Gemara, we'll see reasons why. Continues the Mishnah, Gersha, if he divorced her, muteresli nosilacher, she's allowed to marry another man. We don't say necessarily that she's infertile, because it might be the other way around. It might be that he's infertile. It might be that the combination of them, sometimes you have, nowadays you go to fertility doctors, for example, sometimes you have the situation, the man by himself is fine, the woman by herself is fine, but for some reason there's an incompatibility between them, whether because of blood types or other things. So in this case, it's not necessarily that the fault lies with her. Therefore, she's allowed to get remarried to even to somebody else who needs to do the mitzvah of Puruvu. But I'll show you, and the second husband can also be with her 10 years. And only then does the halacha of our Mishnah kick in. The imhi pila, if during the 10 years she miscarried, mona mishashi pila, then you count from when she miscarried. In other words, the clock resets. So the Gemara says, Tana Rabbanan, Nasa Isha V'Shaha Ima Eser Shanim, a man married a woman, they stayed together for 10 years, V'lo Yolda, and they didn't get married, Yotzi, then he needs to divorce her, the Yitin Ksuba, but he has to give her a Ksuba, in other words, because if we knew that it was because she was infertile, then he wouldn't have to pay her a Ksuba, because in a certain sense, not really her fault, obviously, it's not her fault to be infertile, but in other words, the flaw would be within her, and therefore he could argue, I wouldn't have married you if I'd known that, and therefore he's not obligated to pay the Ksuba. But here, since we don't know, it could just as well be that he's infertile as that she is, then therefore he has to pay the Ksuba. Because the reason why he has to divorce her is because he may not have had the schus to be built up from her. In other words, maybe she's perfectly healthy and he's perfectly healthy, but the combination is not working out for whatever reason. There is a machlokas rishonim. When we say yotzi, that he divorces her, do we mean that he has to divorce her or not? Rashi later on, and that it's near the end of the perek, learns that it means that the Chachamim will actually force him to divorce her, because after all, he has mitzvah of pruvu, and it's not taking place. So therefore, Rashi later on learns that it means that we actually force him to divorce her. Tosfos has a long discussion over here and says not necessarily. It doesn't mean we force him. It just means we tell him you really need to, and there's the importance of pruvu and the various other things that we tell him, but not necessarily that we force him, says Tosfos. So continues the Braisa. Apple Pishen Raya Ladover. Now you don't have a solid proof that Davka, the deadline should be 10 years, but Zecha Ladover, we have a remembrance for it because you find by Avram of Inu Ansar. Mikates Esa Shanim Lashevis Avram be Eretz Knan. The passage describes that after 10 years where Avram had been living in Eretz Knan, then Sarai says to him, you know, I'm infertile, so come marry Hagar and have children with her. So we see from there a hint about the 10 years. But in other words, so why didn't he marry her earlier? Rashi says, after all, they were married for many years before that. So therefore, l'lamdecha, this teaches you, she'en yeshivas chutz la'aretz over lemin aminyan, the time that you lived in chutz la'aretz is not counted towards that time. Because Rashi says, maybe because of the oven, maybe because of the avera of living in the chutz la'aretz, then maybe therefore that's why they didn't have children. But once they have the schus of Eretz Yisrael and 10 years have passed, now this is one point that this is one point why we don't always apply this halacha nowadays, because of this point that we're saying that there may be specifically that it applies, that the Gemara is saying that it applies specifically only in Eretz Yisrael. Even in Eretz Yisrael itself, you have nowadays the halacha is very rarely, if at all, applied for a number of reasons. One, for a number of reasons that the post can discuss various ins and outs of it. Again, Tosfos is saying it's not even that we require him to divorce her. We're just telling him that he should. There is also, for example, the Ramban learns that we're talking about, the Ramban learns all Gemara to say that it's not even if they were living in Eretz Yisrael all the time, only if they were living in Chutz La'aretz and now they move to Eretz Yisrael, where they now have the extra mitzvah of moving and settling in Eretz Yisrael, then we say that if 10 years pass and nothing happens, then you have a problem. But not, for example, if they were living in Eretz Yisrael all along. And the Braisa continues, Lefichach. Now, since we see that, for example, living in Chutz La'aretz doesn't count, so whatever we can attribute the infertility to, we're going to, rather than saying that it's just that she's completely infertile. So therefore, Lefichach, by the same logic, Cholahu, if during the 10 years he was sick, or she was sick, or if both of them were in jail. So in all those cases, then we use that as an excuse to say, then it doesn't count towards the time, and therefore you don't count that towards the 10 years. So again, you have the post can discuss the various ins and outs of this. In principle, this halacha should apply, but practically speaking, we see we have these various exceptions and various other ones, and therefore this halacha is rarely, if ever, applied nowadays. At most, we would tell him you should get divorced, but we don't require him to, as Tosfos is saying. Okay, so the Gemara says, Amalei Rava Lerav Nachman. Now, so Rava asked Rav Nachman, why are we learning from the pasuk with Avram Avinu? And why are we learning from the pasuk with Avram Avinu, where we're saying that he waited 10 years and then he married Hagar, the Leilach from Yitzchak? Instead, why don't we learn from Yitzchak? Yitzchak was 40 when he married Rivka. And then it says that Yitzchak was 60 when the twins, Yaakov and Esav, were born. So we see, in other words, that he waited for 20 years, and he didn't marry another wife in between. Rashi mentions on a pasuk he didn't marry another wife because he's like an oil of tmima, but still that still doesn't explain why he didn't divorce. If he's required to, then why didn't he divorce Rivka? Now Tosfos points out that again this goes back to what we talked about the other day, that if Rivka was 3 when they got married, then anyway, Rashi mentions on the pasuk there's a very good reason for the 20 years. Because it took 10 years for her to b'chalal become mature till she was 13 and even able to bear children. And then he waited 10 years after that. So Tosfos says, we learned the other day in the Gemara, that the Gemara said that Rivka, when she met Eliezer, was a Naira. She was at least 12. Based on the calculation Tosfos made over there, she may have been even 14. So therefore, Tosfos says that the Gemara, again, our Gemara is evidently arguing with the famous Seder Olam that she was 3, and in fact was saying that she was 12 or 14, and therefore there was no reason to wait a first 10 years. If we see that altogether he waited 20 years, then we see that on the face of it, that you're allowed to wait 20 years. So that's the question. And why don't we learn from Yitzchak that you could wait as much as 20 years? The answer is Amalei. So he answers him Yitzchak Okur. Yitzchak himself was infertile, so he knew, and we're going to learn soon in the Gemara how we know that. So he knew, therefore, that the fact that they're not having children is because of his incapability, because of his infertility, rather than because of Rivka's. The whole point of the 10 years is that he should get remarried, and he may be able to have children with another wife, but Yitzchak knew that he himself is not going to be able to have children. So the question is, Yehoki Avram Nami Okrohoya. You could say the same thing Avram was also. We're going to say soon that he was also infertile. So in that case, you're back to the question, how are you learning from him? The answer is that no. The fact is, it's true that both Yitzchak and Avraham were infertile. And the reason why Yitzchak didn't remarry is because, anyway, he knew he's not going to have children with another wife as well. But when the Pasuk mentioned that Yitzchak was 60, when the twins were born, it's not that the Pasuk has to tell us that in order to tell us that he waited 20 years such that we should use that as an example for other people and say that by other people you can always wait 20 years. No, rather, the reason why the Torah tells us Yitzchak's age when Esav and Yaakov were born is in order to learn other things in chronology. The Amar of Chiva Abba, Amar of Yechon, Lama Nimnu Shnoisav Shal Yishmael, Kriyel Yachzben Shnoisav Shal Yaakov. The reason why Yishmael's age is given in the Torah, even though he wasn't a tzaddik his whole lifetime, so why would it mention his age? In order to tell us the years of Yaakov, Rashi explains at the end of the parasha, told us the whole detailed calculation over there, that from, by figuring out when Yishmael was born and how much older he was than Yaakov, we derive that Yaakov was 63 when he got the brachas, and we derive the rest of one of the chronology of Yaakov's life, that he spent 14 years in Yeshua Shem Ve'ever, etc. The point is, all of that requires, part of that calculation requires us to know how old Yitzchak was, and therefore how old Yishmael was, when Yaakov and Esav were born. Therefore, the Pasuk makes a point of mentioning that Yitzchak was 60. Not in order to teach us that you can wait 20 years, but rather it was needed for that purpose. So yes, it's true that Yitzchak and Avraham were both infertile, but nevertheless, we could still learn from Avraham, at least. We see that Avraham did try to have children with Hagar, and he had Yishmael. So therefore, the point is, Yitzchak, we would expect to have tried as well. And the fact that they went 20 years doesn't teach us that other people are allowed to wait 20 years. The Pasuk mentions the 20 years for a different purpose in order that we understand how old Yaakov was relative to Yitzchak and how old Yishmael was relative to them and so on and so forth. But it's not meant to be that we learn from him to other people. So the Gemara goes on. On this topic, Amar of Yitzchak, Yitzchak Avinu Okruhaya. Yitzchak was actually infertile. Shenema, the pasuk says, "Vayeta Yitzchak LaHashem L'Noichach Ishtoi." The pasuk says that Yitzchak gave to Hashem L'Noichach, which means opposite his wife. So al ishtoy le'nemer, it doesn't say regarding his wife that she should be able to have children. Ela le'noichach, it says opposite. Melamet sheshneim akurim hoyu. Therefore, you see from that actually that both melamet sheshneim akurim hoyu. That teaches us that both of them were infertile. So therefore, le'noichach, he's davening opposite her. In other words, she's davening and he's davening because each of them has what to daven for because they're both infertile. So the Gemara says, Yehochi by also loy, then why does the pasuk continue that Hashem answered his tefillah? By also lahem mi by loy, should say Hashem answered their tefillahs. If you say that Yitzchak is davening only for his wife, so Rashi tags out. If you say that he's davening only for his wife, then therefore it's the pasuk is saying by also loy that he davened that his wife should be able to have children. And sure enough, atar rifkeishter. But if you're saying he's davening for himself and they're both davening. And they're both davening for themselves or for each other because they're both infertile, then it should say, Vayyasa lahem. The answer is, Vafisha in a dermit, feel a tzaddik ben tzaddik, but feel a tzaddik ben Rasha. The answer is that he was a tzaddik, the son of a tzaddik, the son of Abraham. Therefore, whereas her tefillah, she was a tzaddikus, the daughter of a Rasha. Therefore, his tefillah was answered first, and therefore the pasuk explains that by saying, Vayyasa loy. So therefore, in other words, because Hashem accepted his tefillah more, because he had not only his own schus, he had the schus of his parents as well. He had the schus of Abraham and Sarah as well, whereas Rivka's parents had been Rishon. So the Gemara goes on. Amar Rav Yitzchok, from name Ma Hoyu Avisenu Akurim. Why indeed were our Avis infertile? Because Hashem yearns and desires the tefillah of tzaddikim, so Hashem wants to motivate tzaddikim to daven in order to have children, because Hashem finds those tefillahs very precious. Amr Rav Yitzchak, and further Rav Yitzchak says, Laman lim shel tefillosim shel tzaddikim ke'eser. Why is the tefillah of tzaddikim compared to an eser? Rashi translates eser as a tool that's used, he uses the French word pala, and in Hebrew it's called rachas. It's basically like an oversized spatula that they use when they're winnowing grain, that they use it to throw the grain up into the air, and then the straw and chaff and whatnot blows away. Different other mephoshim talk about, and Tosfos themselves talks about in some other places that it may not be, Tosfos Yeshanim mentions it, that it may not be that, rather may mean a pitchfork. Whatever it is, the Pasuk says, by Yetar, Yitzchok Lashem, and by Yosser, Loy Hashem. So the Gemara, now the simple meaning of by Yetar and by Yosser means that the Shurdish Eser means a lot, that Rashi mentions on the Pasuk. So it means that Yitzchok davened a lot to Hashem, and Hashem accepted the lot of his tefillahs. But the Gemara is doubting over here that you have the farm tool called an Eser, a pitchfork, or whatever it is. Why is that word being used of the tefillah of Tzaddik? So it means ma eser zeh mahapach atur mimakom lamakom. Just like the eser, the pitchfork or whatever it is used to turn over the grain from one place to another. Kach tefillosin shal tzaddikim ma'apachas migayosin shal HaKadosh Baruch Hu mimidas rav zonus lemidas rachmanus. The same way the tefillah of tzaddikim turns over Hashem's midah from anger to rachmanus, and the same way therefore. So now it had the effect that now they're able to have children. Continues the Gemara on this topic. Omer Rav Ami, Avraham and Sarah tumtumin hayu. Avraham and Sarah were originally tumtumin. We're going to talk about later in the Masechta more about the details of the tumtum. But a tumtum is somebody where there's a covering over their genitals, so you can't easily tell whether it's male or female. And they have in halacha, they have the status of a suffix male, suffix man, suffix woman. So Tosfos discusses that fine, by the time he married Sarah, apparently they had done an operation to remove that. Otherwise, how is he marrying Sarah in the first place? Nevertheless, Tosfos says, generally a tumtum who's been operated on is still going to remain infertile. And even if he can have children, it's very rare. So therefore, Avraham and Sarah started out as tumtumin, and therefore it was very unlikely that they're going to have children. Shenema, so as the pasuk says, the Navi, many, many years later, says to the Jewish people, habitual surchutzavdem, look to the rock that you were carved out from, where the meaning of chutzavdim is not only you Jewish people were carved out, but that rock, that aver, had to be carved out for him. In other words, because before it was covered over. The El Makeves Bornu Kautem, and look to the pit from which you were dug out, where also the pit refers to Sarah, and it refers, as the passage continues, look to your father Abraham and to your mother Sarah, and we see therefore that Abraham is compared to a rock that had to be carved out. In other words, his zachos had to be carved out because it was hidden, and similarly Sarah's nachos had to be dug out because it was hidden. Continues the Gemara on this topic. Amar Rav Nachman, Amar Rav Bavua. Sora Imenu Ailonis Haisa. Sora Imenu was an Ailonis, which we're going to talk again later in the Masechta, the details of an Ailonis. She has certain physical symptoms that show that she never matures, her body never matures physically, and therefore that she's infertile. So Sora was like that. Shenema, as the positive says about Tihi Sora Akara, Sora was infertile. Ein La Volod. Now, literally, Ein La Volod means she has no child, but obviously, if she's infertile, she has no child. It means that through the base Volod, Ein La, she didn't even have a place for a child. She didn't even have a womb. An interesting point that comes up in this regard is that you have the psukim that imply that she became nidah. You have at the beginning of Parshas Vayera, even before she conceived Yitzchak, it says over there that she became nidah, and therefore the bread that she made became tameh, and so forth. So if she has no womb, how does she even have dam nidah in the first place? So an interesting point that's discussed about this, that the Shevet Alevi in particular talks about this in one of his Chuvas. He says it doesn't necessarily have to mean that she had no womb at all. It means that her womb was very underdeveloped. Usually a girl is born, she has a womb, and then as she grows, then it grows with her like the rest of the body, like the rest of the organs of her body. Here with Sarah, it remained underdeveloped. So it was there, and Dam Nida could come out of it, but it wouldn't have at all have been possible for it to carry a child were it not that Hashem made it, that Hashem made a nest and enlarged it. So therefore, the point of it is, he says, Lahalacha, if a woman has a hysterectomy where she actually literally has no womb, then she can't become Tommy with Dam Nida anymore because there's no womb for the blood to come out of anymore. So that's why he says, when it says over here, she had no womb, and yet she had Dam Nida, it doesn't mean she had no womb at all. He says it means she had a tiny one. Okay. Now, so we said in the Mishnah that you have 10 years, getting back to the halacha in the Mishnah, that was saying that you have 10 years, and then if the couple doesn't have children, they have to get divorced. So Omer of Yehuda, Breit Der Shmuel, Bar Shilas, Mishmei Derav, Loi Shonu Ela B'Derus HaRishon. That applies only in the earlier generations, Sheshnesen Merubas, where they lived a long time. So therefore you could afford to wait 10 years. In later generations, they live much shorter lives. Then, all you can wait before you have to get divorced and remarried is 2.5 years, which is the equivalent to the amount of time of 3 pregnancies. So if after 2.5 years, you see that she's not getting pregnant, she's not having children, then we're saying that Rabbi Yehuda, B'rei Der Shmuel Bashila, is saying you'd have to get divorced. Rabbi, in the name of Rav Nachman, says that it's not 2.5 years, but rather 3 years, connected to Sholish Pekidas, corresponding to 3 remembrances, where Hashem, so to speak, remembers the infertile women and listens to their tefillah, particularly on Rosh Hashanah, so therefore you have to wait 3 Rosh Hashanahs. The Omamar, as we find, that it says, Rosh Hashanah Nifkidu Sora Rachel Chana, that Hashem remembered Sora Rachel and Chana on Rosh Hashanah and decided that year they would become pregnant. And in fact, that is why we read about Sora on Rosh Hashanah and we read the Haftarah about Chana on Rosh Hashanah, precisely because of that. So therefore, so Rabbah is saying it's not enough to wait 2.5 years. 2.5 years would be enough for 3 pregnancies. It's true because you have nine months for a pregnancy, so that gives you 27 months, and then in between you need your mate Tumah V'Tahara, and therefore that comes to 2.5 years. But that's not enough. Maybe what you need to do, he's saying, is you need to wait until you have 3 Rosh Hashanahs, because each Rosh Hashanah Hashem remembers the infertile women and decides which ones are going to have children that year. So you have to wait till there's 3 of those. On the other hand, Omer Rabbah, Lesnu Lahani Klovi. On the other hand, Rabbah had quoted Rav Nachman to say 3 years, but Rabbah himself says, no, Lesnu Lahani Klovi, these rules that Rav Yehuda Breid Rashmo Bashilas and that Rav Nachman said don't exist. Those are incorrect. Because Mechti, let's consider, Masnissin Mantakin Rebbe, who after all set up the Mishnayos as we have them, Rebbe. And Rebbe was long after David HaMelech. But we made David, Imut Shani. Already in David's times, people were living shorter lives. As the Pasuk says, the years of our lives are 70 years. So already in David's times, they were living an average of only 70 years. Tosfos points out, I mean, this is actually part of Moshe's tefillah, but we can assume that that particular pasuk was actually composed by David, because Moshe, after all, lived to 120. Whatever the case, the point is, by David's times, already lifespans were about the same as they are now. The average was 70 years. Rebbe is 1,000, and Rebbe is almost 1,000 years later. So therefore, so you can't say that when Rebbe composed the Mishnayos, that he would put in there this business about 10 years, which wasn't applicable in his times anymore. So therefore, it must be that the 10 year deadline applies even now. Okay, fine. So let's give it a couple more minutes. So the Gemara asks, now why are you saying when he divorces her, we're saying he has to give her ksuba, which is the implication is, again, that we said he might be in fertile rather than her. Why? You're saying that maybe he didn't have the schus to be built up through her. In other words, maybe there's nothing organically wrong with either one of them, but the combination of them is not working. And therefore, you're saying that's not a valid reason to deny her chuksuba. But how do you know? How do you know? Maybe it's because of she doesn't have a schus. Therefore, maybe she should forfeit her chuksuba. The answer is, a woman doesn't have the mitzvah, pruavu, as we're going to learn tomorrow, Be'ez Hashem. Therefore, you can't say that she'll be punished in a way of being of not having children. So therefore, it's more likely to say that it's either him or it's a combination of them, and therefore, that's not a reason for her to forfeit her ksuba. So the Gemara says, which, by the way, we're going to have tomorrow, we're going to have the opinion of Rabbi Yochanan ben Baraita, who says women are having period. So some of us should say, according to that, in fact, maybe we could say, according to that, maybe indeed we would say that, that in that case, according to him, maybe in fact she would forfeit her silver. Anyway, the Gemara says, Aini, is that so? The Chachamim said to Rav Abba Bar Zabda, you ought to be getting married and you ought to be having children. And he tells them, if I had been zocher to have children, I would have had for my first wife. So he was widowed or divorced, and they're telling him, you need to get remarried. And he's saying, if I had had that source, I would have already had it with my first wife. Now, based on what we're saying, why is that? Abba might be that maybe lo zocher libonis nimena. That maybe the combination of the two of them didn't work out, but with a different wife, it would work. The answer is Hosin de Khuya Kamad Rabban. The answer is Rab Abba Bar Zabda is actually just pushing them off with an excuse. The real reason was because he himself was infertile and he didn't want to call attention to it. Rab Abba Bar Zabda actually became infertile from the droshes of Rav Huna, because Rav Huna used to give very long droshes. The people didn't want to leave in the middle to go to the bathroom, so they would hold it in. And the Gemara mentions in various places that can cause a man to become infertile. So the Gemara says it wasn't only Rav Abba Bar Zabda. Rav Gidol iakam ipirkei de Rav Huna. Rav Gidol had the same problem. Rav Chelba iakam ipirkei de Rav Huna. Also Rav Chelba. And Rav Sheshes iakam ipirkei de Rav Huna. And Rav Sheshes also. Rav Sheshes reported the other day, we said for that reason, Rav Sheshes said, they told him that you need to have more children, and he says, I have grandchildren, that's good enough. And again, the Gemara says, really, he was only using that as an excuse. Really, physically, he was incapable. So all of that was as a result of that they stayed a long time by Rav Huna's shiur. Now, the Gemara continues with another one of the Chachamim, Rav Acha bar Yaakov achadte suschinta. Rav Acha bar Yaakov was struck by suschinta, which is this disease that causes from urinary retention, where a person can become infertile. But he realized it right away. Talyua ba'arza de'beirav, they suspended him from the cedar of the house of Rav, which can mean either, sometimes it means like the central column that held up the roof of the Beis Medrash. Other times it can mean an actual cedar tree that grew there. Whatever, they suspended him from it as a cure. The nafik minei kohutse yarka, and the urine or whatever it is that had been held back that would have caused him to become infertile came out from him like a green palm. So in other words, they were able to catch it in time, and he was able to get it out in time to prevent himself from becoming infertile. So in fact, Amar of Achav Yaakov Shitin Savi Havena, there were 60 of us elder Talmid Chachamim who were Talmidim of Rav Huna. All of them became infertile as a result of his droshes. I'm not, except for myself, the kind of, I was able to fulfill regarding myself the expression in the pasuk Chochma keeps its owner alive. In other words, I was able to realize the symptoms right away and be able to take steps to prevent it from happening, whereas the other ones did not realize it in time, and by the time they realized it was too late and it affected their fertility. Okay, so we'll continue tomorrow, Be'ez Hashem, with more about the dinim and the discussion of our Mishnah.